These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seachtain, an Indo Ascaeilige.
Time I mon iarrachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach anseo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintear féin.
Scíltí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam ag gnám go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarrin grúvan ar cárstan i lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár dúchas in éachar. Nau ni vin áun dár dárach sé sin, vin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Just a warning that today's episode contains details of domestic violence which some listeners may find upsetting.
Terrorist, Garda killer and prolific wife beater. Piers McCauley's long litany of convictions have established him as one of Ireland's most dangerous criminals for over 30 years.
He was still, I suppose, seen as one of those big IRA operators. You know, he brought the war to the British. There was all a sort of folklore around him. And then it turns out that, you know, his violence wasn't constrained to that. He was basically just a very violent and angry man. And he took that into his home as well.
The Northern Irish paramilitary figure made the headlines in the early 90s for a daring escape from an English prison.
IRA suspects Piers McCauley and Nessun Quinlivan shot their way out of Brixton prison on July the 7th this year.
But his crimes against the state in the shooting of an innocent Garda in 1996 would wrap his name in infamy in Irish criminal history.
The two armed detectives were shot shortly before 7 o'clock this morning as they sat in an unmarked Garda car.
It became subject of thousands and thousands of column inches and headlines. Was peace even possible? And what that meant for the future?
I'm Tabitha Monaghan, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Alison Morris, crime correspondent with the Belfast Telegraph, to discuss the life and crimes of one of Ireland's most violent terrorists and whether Sinn Féin can ever escape their links to figures within the Republican movement.
The culpability and responsibility for that violence and for those actions reside with the individual who carried them out.
Alison, we learned about the death of Piers McCauley this week. What do we know about how he died?
Well, what we've been told is that his death, the PSNI have said it's not suspicious. He was found in his home in Strabane, where he had been living since his release from prison in 2022. And so far, you know, what I'm hearing from people in that area and who knew him is that it's a suspected heart attack. He had been living quite a solitary life, albeit he had a new partner and has quite a lot of family who live in around the Strabane area, but he hadn't been seen out and about as he usually would have. He hadn't attended any Republican commemorations or events or any of the things that he would have been linked to in the past. But it seems at this stage that he died of a heart attack.
Can you take us back to his early life and when he first became a member of the Republican movement?
He's from a very committed Republican family. They would be known in the Strabane and County Tyrone area as being a very staunchly Republican family. And so he's been involved in the IRA from his very early days. I suppose when he really rose to fame was in 1991 when himself and Nessun Quinlivan were on remand in Brixton Prison. They were accused at that time of conspiring to murder the British Brewery executive Sir Charles Tidbury, and they escaped from prison. that made global headlines at the time. Brixton was meant to be one of the most secure prisons. It was a very high-profile escape. They had attended a church service that morning and McCauley produced a gun.
Pierce McCauley had a tiny American handgun, a .25 Raven automatic, hidden inside his training shoe.
We later learned that that had been posted in, concealed inside a pair of shoes that had been posted from somewhere in Ireland.
After the service, at 10.07, the prisoners, flanked by three officers, were being escorted back to their cells in A Wing. But they never got that far.
It's gonna be us!
Quinlivan and McCauley took the first escorting officer hostage.
He fired shots at the prison guards, and then they later shot a prison officer in the leg and stole his car before driving off. So that was when he would have really made headlines. Also, earlier that year, there'd been a very high-profile rocket attack on Downing Street while a cabinet meeting was taking place. And again, that sort of shook the British establishment to its core that, you know, somewhere like Downing Street could be vulnerable to that kind of IRA attack.
Two men were seen running away from the van, which appears to have been stopped on a precise spot to launch the bombs. There's no doubt this attack had been well planned. The mortars aimed at a precise angle through a hole cut in the roof. Finding that spot would have taken weeks of surveillance.
So McCauley at that stage would have been considered one of the most high-profile IRA men who was involved, especially specifically on the IRA's campaign that took place when they took their war to England, if you like, if they took their war to Britain. You know, at that stage, there was a saying that, you know, 100 bombs in Northern Ireland wouldn't make the headlines that one in London will. And there was a very concerted effort, I think, to bring that armed campaign to the streets of London and England, and McCauley would have been very actively involved in that.
But he was a fugitive in the UK when he escaped Brixton Prison, but he did move back to Ireland.
He did, even on the run to Ireland, Ness and Quinlivan did as well. But he didn't stop his IRA activity then. He immediately made touch with the IRA and continued on with his IRA activity. And when, you know, we know that right up until then, we have the robbery in Adair, which led to the killing of Garda McCabe.
The two armed detectives were shot shortly before 7 o'clock this morning as they sat in an unmarked Garda car which was escorting a post office lorry making a delivery of social welfare and pension money to Adair post office. Their car was first rammed in the rear by a Mitsubishi Pajero Jeep before three raiders got out and started firing at the Gardaí.
Can you tell us a little bit about the killing of Garda Jerry McCabe, and one of the most notorious killings in the 90s?
It was because there had been an IRA ceasefire, and then this took place very shortly after the collapse of that first ceasefire in 1996. We're actually coming up to the 30th anniversary of those first ceasefires this year. At that stage, McCauley was with three Limerick IRA men. It was Jeremiah Shea, Michael O'Neill and a guy called Kevin Mulch. They were later convicted. What was happening was they were involved in a robbery. They were approached by the Garda and they shot an AK-47, killing Garda Jerry McCabe and seriously injuring his colleague, Ben O'Sullivan, in the same attack.
Three guys in fatigues, army fatigues and balaclavas jumped out of the Jeep and attacked the patrol car and started shooting. I jumped off the tail lift of the truck and moved on to the footpath. I had my hands in the air because I thought that they were in such a state that they would have shot anybody that passed.
They were jailed for that and held in prison, and there became then, in 1998, the Good Friday Agreement, between 1998 and 2000, the majority of paramilitary prisoners were then released early under the early release scheme as part of the Good Friday Agreement negotiations. The Irish government said that these men were not eligible for release under that scheme, and so Sinn Féin ran quite a high profile campaign to try and have them freed.
The death of Jerry McCabe, that would be considered one of the darkest hours of the Troubles.
For Sinn Féin itself, at first they tried to deny involvement, then they said it was unsanctioned, and then I think they had to say it was sanctioned at local level and not by their leadership, because more than the impact that had in the South, that these two men, that one had died, one had almost died, but it was because there was peace negotiations going on at the minute. And if you think back to that time, the like of John Hume, who was engaged in those negotiations, was coming under quite serious pressure. It's not even so much from the media in Northern Ireland, who, you know, were in favour, but at this time they were taking baby steps and thinking, will this work or won't it work? Unionists, in many cases, Ian Paisley was leading the charge against it and saying you shouldn't be negotiating or talking to terrorists.
Sinn Féin are so stained with our blood that it would take 100 years to pass before you could acknowledge them as even decent.
So it became subject of thousands and thousands of column inches and headlines as they dissected what it meant, not just for his family and for his widow and for the state and for the people who were traumatised by this and those who grieved him, but also in terms of the political process, the peace process and the ceasefires and what that meant for the future. Was peace even possible? And remember, these were, you know, in 1996, those ceasefire talks had already taken place. There had already been one ceasefire, albeit that broken down. There was quite serious negotiations in terms of negotiating a second ceasefire, which would actually happen then later that year. But yeah, this was a major setback to that. And I think the political ramifications of it were quite serious on top of everything else.
And aside from Macaulay's involvement in McCabe's death, he also became very known for his treatment of his wife.
Well, Macaulay met Pauline Tully in prison. I think that she had been up visiting another prisoner and she had then started speaking to him. Then they started writing to each other. And then she ended up marrying him in prison before his release. His release from prison again was quite high profile because at that stage Sinn Féin member Martin Ferris came to collect him from the gates of Castlereagh Prison in County Cavan, and there was dozens of supporters waiting nearby. At one stage the road was blocked to stop photographers, and Pauline Tully would have been waiting on him being released at that time. You know, they were married in prison. She comes from a very Republican family as well. She's currently a Sinn Féin TD, and they would have seemed like people who, I suppose, were politically on the same page. At that stage, we were told that these men were supporters of the peace process and that they were going to go on to be constructive advocates for the peace process. But Macaulay just appears to have been a very violent man, and his violence was not constrained to political violence, as he would have called it, or IRA violence, but he became very violent in his own home and had harassed his wife to the point where they had separated in the February of 2015 before he actually attacked her. She had, at that stage, some kind of restraining order against him. But on Christmas Eve, she had agreed to allow him to come and visit their two children for Christmas. He arrived drunk and an argument ensued. And for, I think, well over an hour and a half, he launched an attack on her, stabbing her 13 times, breaking several of her fingers, leaving her next to almost dead. And her children witnessed quite a lot of this attack.
And I opened the door and it was himself. And as soon as he came in, he just lifted his fist in the air and hit me in this eye here, in my left eye. And he started rummaging his pocket, and I thought it was a gun he was going to take out. But it was a knife. It was an absolute dreadful ordeal.
Would he have been an official member of Sinn Féin in that period?
He comes from a family who would still be Sinn Féin supporters. When he was released from prison after the Gerry McCabe stuff, right up until this, he would have been seen at quite a lot of Sinn Féin events. I think he was seen out canvassing for Sinn Féin. He would have been seen at those sort of commemorations. I mean, given the fact this man escaped from Brixton prison, despite what went on with Gerry McCabe, he was still, I suppose, seen as one of those big IRA operators. You know, he brought the war to the British. There was all this sort of folklore around him. And then it turns out that, you know, his violence wasn't constrained to that. He was basically just a very violent and angry man. And he took that into his home as well. I know from all of the work that I've done in relation to femicide and domestic abuse and everything that goes along with that, that a lot of this takes place in the home and it's very hidden. And I do get the impression from the very few interviews that Pauline Tully has given that there was an attempt on her part, at least, to try and keep this as private and as secret as possible before she couldn't tolerate it any longer and then had to separate from him.
As time went on, I was more in fear. Not necessarily when he was sober, but when he had drink taken. And there were a few times I was very, very afraid that I would not sleep until I was absolutely sure he'd conked out,
right,
drunk, you know, or whatever.
And then obviously you're left with the trouble of how you deal with the children and their access to their father. And this is like an age-old problem in many domestic violence situations. But yeah, I do get the impression that there was an attempt, at least, to try and cover a lot of this behaviour up, not by Emma Tullian, I'm saying she did, but just been in general to try and keep this man's image as some sort of, you know, IRA hero, right up until the point where it couldn't be covered up anymore.
I want to apologise to Mrs McCabe and the McCabe family, and to Garda Ben O'Sullivan, and to the families of other members of the state forces who were killed by Republicans in the course of the conflict. I am very sorry for the pain and the loss inflicted on those families. Now, no words of mine can remove that hurt, and dreadful deeds cannot be undone.
And what happened after that brutal attack on Pauline Tully?
A neighbour had actually run to her brother's house and alerted him. He lived quite close by. Tommy Tully arrived on the scene. You'll see those famous pictures of Piers McCauley when he was being brought into court to face the charges for attacking his ex-wife. He has two black eyes. Her brother actually knocked him out before the emergency services arrived. He threatened to kill him as well. And then he was jailed for that attack too. A lot of people would have said not for long enough. He was sentenced to 12 years. The last four of that was to be spent on probation. And we know from the interviews that she has given, I think in terms of speaking to your local paper and to your podcast, and also from the victim impact statement that she made, she was left completely traumatised by that, not aware if he would come back again, if she would ever be rid of him, or else he would come back and attack her again. And the fear of that must have been absolutely horrendous in terms of trying to live with that. So, you know, she clearly didn't believe that he had been someone who had been rehabilitated and was going to come out of prison and behave very differently, and she'd lived with the fear of that. So he was released in July 2022. He was picked up from the exact same prison again, this time very quietly, just by one person who picked him up. He had his face covered with a mask, he had sunglasses on, and he disappeared and went back to Strabane, where he had been living then, obviously, until his death.
I know you had mentioned earlier on that he hadn't been seen about where he was living, or he hadn't attended commemorations. But from 2022 up until this point, do we know what his activities were even then?
Yeah, I mean, he managed to get a new partner, and some people will gasp at that, you know, that someone would want to be in a relationship with a man who had stabbed his previous wife 13 times in front of their children. But his death notice, which appeared in the paper this week, indicated he had a new partner since then. He had been living quite a quiet life. His family would still be considered very staunch Republicans. But I mean, any Sinn Féin members I spoke to said, you know, he hadn't been seen about. He was rarely seen in Strabane itself. He was, I think, living quite a sort of solitary life. A lot of that was spent at home. And clearly wasn't in great health, as in terms of his own abuse and addiction issues with drink and everything else. Remember when he showed up at Pauline Tully's house on that Christmas Eve, it was very early in the morning and he was already drunk. You know, he was someone who was believed had a drink problem. But he does have quite a large family. You know, a funeral will take place in Strabane on Thursday, where you'll have Requiem Mass in the Church of the Immaculate Conception in the town. And previously, had he died in, you know, any sort of similar circumstances before this attack on his ex-wife, you'd have probably expected this to be quite a large funeral with all the trappings of someone who had lived such a high-profile Republican life. I expect this to be a far more quiet and family affair at this stage, with only close family and friends present. And the person that I spoke to just said, you know, that the only thing that came from it is they hope that Miss Tully could get some peace, knowing that, you know, her and her family are now safe from any further attack from this man.
And McCauley's name, it did come back up in the news last year during the trial of Gerry the Monk Hutch. Why was his name brought up in that trial?
Utterly bizarrely, yes it did. And it showed that despite everything that had happened, that he still considered himself someone of influence. So we know that during that trial of Gerry the Monk Hutch, that it emerged that Hutch had sought help from distant Republicans, from members of the new IRA, who he hoped could intervene in the gangland feud to try and bring it to an end. And to that end, he was using Jonathan Dowdall, the former Sinn Féin councillor who went on to turn state's evidence against him in that trial. And Dowdall had contacted McCauley and had visited him in prison. And it was McCauley who then put them in contact with dissidents from his native Strabane.
McCauley put him in contact with distant Republicans in Northern Ireland, including Shane Rowan, who was subsequently caught with the Regency guns and jailed for 7 years.
And Dowdall, he did try to minimise his links with McCauley, but he met him quite a lot in prison.
Yeah. 14 times is not, you know, the kind of thing that you'd pass off as someone who was just a minor acquaintance. You know, he clearly had quite a close relationship with him. And Macaulay, he obviously considered to be still someone of influence who could put him in touch with people. At that stage, remember those AK-47s that were used in that attack on the Regency Hotel way back in 2016? They were trading those guns with dissident Republicans in order to get their assistance in relation to that feud. And remember, there were people from Strabane who were involved in the Regency attack, which Gerry Hutch was on trial for. Obviously, Hutch was found not guilty at the end of that trial. Dowdall's evidence wasn't believed. But what we do know is because his car was bugged and a lot of everything else that went on was monitored at that time, that he had been visiting Pierce Macaulay in prison.
And my thanks to Alison Morris. I'm Tabitha Monaghan, and today's episode of The Indo Daily was produced by Ian Doyle, researched by Shane Brennan, with sound by Rory Bones. Archive clips from RTE News, BBC, Northern Sound, Shannon Side Radio and The Irish Independent. If you enjoyed The Indo Daily, don't forget to follow the podcast and leave us a review.
These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them, like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs. Crack on.